Welcome back to Serie A Spotlight, everyone. This is a question segment episode. We never have time to address your questions on our regular episodes, so we said, hey, it's a Saturday. We've got nothing planned. Why don't we address your questions and obviously give back and engage with our community?
In between the fantastic 3 o'clock games and Milan Como.
Which has to be a win because Milan are making Champions League, of course. They're going to go on a undefeated run.
Yes. As Alan said, he's going to go on a hunger strike as well, so he can start believing in Milan winning the Champions League as well.
Fantastic. Before we dive in, as always, a massive thank you to our media partners in Benevobid. These are the beautiful kits that you could see behind us, which are actually signed by players. There's actual proof of that as well, as you could see on their Instagram. Most of the proceeds do go to Puttino Cares, which is a local charity, so do go show Benevobid some love. Check out their website and put in a bid. It's still early days, so you could actually get away with one hell of a kit at quite a decent price as well.
If you ever catch yourself wondering, does anyone really care? Rest assured, Puttino Cares.
Puttino Cares. If you guys are new here, I'm going to take a second. Thank you so much for that. That
was Puttino Cares, bro.
Puttino Cares. If you guys are new here, make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. Rate us 5 stars on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, with weekly episodes covering each match day, and have weekly bonus tactical analysis episodes called Tactics Imperium by John Lian. Shout out to John. And we also have a website if you prefer visual aid to your tactics. This question segment, as a separate episode, is something we're going to try to do a little bit more of. Our 2-hour episodes are quite stacked with match day content and talking points. So this does seem like the only way we could address listener questions.
And we can take our time with it as well. We don't have to cram it into 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You know what I mean? We can take a bit longer on
exactly.
it. And it's a bit of a different tone to the rest of the episode because we'll be fresh, of course. Not like at the end of a 2-hour episode.
So burnt out
exactly.
by the end of it.
We've been debating whether or not Milan are still in the top four.
Great. Not even a debate, bro. No. Yeah. If you really love us, become a patron. It's $3.99 a month, and you can win a free kit if you win our fantasy league. But
shall
without
we?
Further ado, let's jump into our first question,
which comes from Ben on Twitter, our resident Hellas Verona fan.
What a legend.
He surely enjoyed the Duda goal we've just seen. He must have
yes.
lost his mind. He says, thoughts on Daniel Mosquera being the greatest striker to grace Serie A?
Let me just say, he learns quick, Daniel Mosquera, because when we saw that Verona were signing him and we looked him up, there wasn't a single highlight we saw of him playing on grass. So it's good to see that he adapted quite quickly. I think we thought he was going to adapt even quicker because on his first game, he came on as a substitute and scored
twice. He was like, wow, this grass is really easy to play on.
Like, I'm faster on it. I'm sharper on it.
Of course, he was playing in Colombia before, and this is a joke that we had on our weekly episodes about Daniel Mosquera not knowing how to play on grass and potentially struggling. But he hit the ground running, hit the grass running, rather, and he's still been quite useful. He has his moments where he looks absolutely terrible, but he gets a goal here and there.
He's very raw
in that sense.
Not refined at all, but if you want to bring on someone that's just going to body the defenders, then he's a good shout for someone.
He's no Kasper Tengstedt.
No.
That's
no.
it.
Absolutely not. They're very different profiles.
The next questions come from Frank. You know it's Frank when I say questions. He always asks some very thought-provoking stuff, which I love.
Yes, I adore it.
In terms of transfer fees paid and output on the pitch, is Vlahovic the biggest flop in Serie A of the last 10 to 15 years? If not, who? Now, Matt and I, when we were discussing this prior to this recording session, we're like, surely there must have been someone who was a worse flop than Vlahovic, right? But when it comes to output on the pitch, transfer fee paid and salary paid, I think Vlahovic takes the cake, man.
He takes the cake. It's the only thing. I think so, Frank, to answer your question. Yes, is the answer. In the past 15 years, I do believe that paying 83.5 million in January for Dusan Vlahovic, paying him 12 million a season, and I believe 12 million we said was net.
Yes, 12 million
was net, so it's like 19 million gross per season. For him to put in the performances that he's been putting in and have the 2 seasons that he has had in the past 2 seasons, it's not good enough. The thing is, for Fiorentina, he had 44 goals in 98 games. For Juventus, he has 42 goals in 97 games. So if in his next game for Juve, he scores a doppietta, they got exactly what they paid for, what they saw at Fiorentina. It's like, oh, you had that for 2 years, bring him in, or sorry, for 3 years, and we'll have that for three years. Uh-huh. So it's a copy-paste.
The stats make this an interesting discussion, because at Fiorentina, in my opinion, he looked way more serviceable, way more in tune with the system, way more deployable, mm-hmm. quite frankly. And his first season at Juve was much better.
Mm-hmm.
Now this season, he's making too many mistakes. His confidence is completely shot. I think when it comes to that's it, right? As you correctly said, bro, they got exactly what they paid for when it comes uh-huh. to output. However,
what they overpaid for.
Exactly, but the payment was an investment in yeah. theory. So you'd expect him to, if not improve his numbers, because that is quite difficult when you're scoring once every 2 games. Mm-hmm. It's quite difficult to improve on that. At least off the ball, you should have improved. And I think he's actually taken a step back from his
absolutely, absolutely. And I think if you look at, putting aside the statistics and the numbers, as people that actually watch the game and not just base it off of these numbers,
yeah.
At Fiorentina, he made the team stronger, not only by his goals, but the runs that he was making off the ball, dragging
his teammates were playing him in behind
his,
as well.
His teammates were playing him in behind. They played in that Italiano system, where was it Italiano?
It was Italiano,
absolutely. Yeah. So Vlahović was really stretching their defense by making these runs off the ball. At Juve, he's forced a little bit more to play with his back towards goal, and he had that with Allegri. And then everyone's like, oh, when they get a more offensive-minded manager, he's going to be serviced more. And then they got Motta, who likes to play with the false nine striker in a system where mm-hmm. he needs to drop deep and he needs to be good at linking up with his colleagues, playing a very deep role as a striker. So the system simply didn't suit him. And I think if they kind of... They didn't sign the striker that would fit in best to their system, but they rather bought the best, most hyped striker that there was in Serie A at that point.
Yes, that's exactly it. I do think that there's still a good striker in there. I saw a video that was going viral, was doing the rounds on Instagram. It was Vlahović's last 17 shots or something.
Yeah.
And granted, some of them are a disaster, but you can tell by looking at it that this is a player whose confidence is shot
yeah.
and who does have bags of ability.
Absolutely.
And we've seen it, right? I always mention those 2 goals against Empoli
mm-hmm.
because the opponent doesn't even matter. It's the way he controls and handles the ball that's mm-hmm. impressive. It's not because he managed to I don't know, dribble 3 players, for example, and score top bins against a poor side. That would have yeah. been hard to do against anyone, what mm-hmm. he did. The way mm-hmm. he controls, turns, it's...
I think
he's a great striker when he's confident.
Yeah, I don't think that it says too much about his own ability, this failed stint. He didn't fit into the system.
Yeah.
He would do bits at other teams. I think he'd be a fantastic striker at a lot of teams.
Arsenal, maybe. It'd be good.
Arsenal, for yeah. example. Although Arsenal do like a Kai Havertz, Gabriel Jesus, that's a bit more like Xerxes.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, for example, when Milan had Morata and Juve had Vlahović, there was this whole thing that if they swap strikers, they would fit in each other's
yeah,
systems more.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of teams that could use Vlahović. I just wanted to shout out a couple of people that give Vlahović a run for his money, uh-huh. Frank. The Artur Melo deal, that 82 million deal that included the Pjanic swap.
The dodgy.
The really dodgy. Swap. 82 million, 5 to 7 million euros per season. Constantly injured, loaned out to Liverpool, flopped there as well. Huge wages, a lot of money paid, and zero impact.
Yeah,
that was a huge one. That's the closest one, in my opinion. It's between Vlahović and Artur Melo.
Yeah, and then there's Bonucci, of course, who had joined Milan from Juventus in 2017. He had a salary of 12 million a season and an initial signing fee of 42 million.
Madonna.
He spent 1 season at Milan. The first half of the season, he was absolutely rubbish.
Shit.
I remember it clearly. Then he scored against Juventus and did his celebration in front of the fans. For us Milan fans, making every cent worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Because back then... I remember you bought his t-shirt. Not a kit. You bought the t-shirt.
There was a t-shirt on... I don't even remember what I had bought it from. It was like one of these kind of like merch websites. Yeah. But yeah. And also, shout out to Jeffrey Condogbia. 36 million from Monaco to Inter in 2015. Was meant to be a box-to-box player. Scored an own goal from halfway.
Yeah, oh my remember God. That? Yeah, a peak banter era for Inter, that was. There's also Patrick Schick to Roma. Roma gave
nicknamed Patrick Shit back then.
They paid Roma 42 million for him up front, and they gave him 5 to 6 million per season. Only 8 league goals in 2 seasons for him, and eventually sold at a loss. We have some honorable mentions as well. Of course, Andre Silva at Milan, where Milan paid 38 million for him, gave us hope, scored a couple of goals in the Europa League. And he was loaned out to Sevilla, where he was like, he scored a couple of hat-tricks, I believe. Yeah, yeah. And we're like, oh, he's going to come back and be lit. Wasn't like, that was a train. Like those Lee signings were terrible. Paqueta, obviously, that went with him. And Maldini's only, the move that got Maldini done, essentially, CDK at one season at Milan.
That was quite bad. It was totally unfortunate, but it was quite bad in the end. It's true.
Yeah.
And then we have the lower tier sides. Of course, we've had their fair share of flops, like when Venezia signed Nani. But of course, they wouldn't be as grand scale as these. For the team itself, they would invest a lot of assets to bring in these players, but they don't stand out, of course, as much as these ones. Every team that's bought Petania, the Meno teams, it's been a bit of a flop, for example.
We mentioned, and this is by no way calling the player a flop, because he actually goes down in history for this team. The full effect of Juve signing Ronaldo. It actually put the club through a lot financially after they paid 100 million for him.
An off-the-pitch flop signing. Yeah. Not an on-the-pitch flop signing. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Because COVID came about straight after and they got caught doing these dodgy payments and
Papu Gomez to Monza was a flop as well, because he drank his son's Calpol, which happened to have testosterone.
The next Frank question is also a banger.
So he says, at the end of the season, would you try to persuade Ranieri to stay or let him leave on a high? If so, who would you go for?
Can I just pass a message on to Roma? Leave him alone. He's you pulled him out of retirement.
I feel bad for his wife, man.
He's 73. C'est la vie, man. Fucking chill. Go to the beach, man. What's this?
Get yourself a chair outside. Sit there. Do nothing, man. Like in Greece and in Italy. Those elderly people you just see doing nothing.
Exactly. Dolce far niente. Like that really tanned guy with a bunch of skin pigmentation with tutto passa tattooed. It's fucking like light green, the tattoo. It's a disaster. No, I wouldn't convince Ranieri. I think getting Ranieri for the remainder of the season was to bring peace and was to bring serenity. It's not the long-term solution. You can't keep a 73-year-old as a long-term solution. Take nothing away from him, because he's timeless. He could do it until he's 100, I'm sure of it. But he won't. Is the thing. It's a short-term solution.
He said that he's not changing his mind. TMW journalist Marco Conterio said that the Friedkins have assigned Ranieri the task of selecting their next manager.
That I like. His protege.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work. So Alex Ferguson chose David Moyes as his protege.
But, you know, United fans say he wasn't given enough time. Ranieri was even spotted handing a mysterious note to Ernesto Valverde after their Europa League clash with Bilbao. He said he gave it to him to discuss some Spanish players. It's being rumored right now that he might be a candidate for the job. But it's looking like it's going to be someone like Sarri or Gasperini. They want an Italian, don't they?
I've heard Ancelotti, who I think...
Would he, though?
Style-wise, I see Ancelotti in his... Like, he's 65, Ancelotti. I see him doing a couple of years in Italy. I would hope it would be Milan.
Yeah, he went to Everton, you know.
I think he should end his career in Italy. Even though it's likely he'll end it at Real Madrid. I mean, he's making so much money there as well. But I think a caliber like Ancelotti and not a caliber, but a style like Ancelotti, who gives players freedom and it's not this rigid tactical system. We've seen that that doesn't work for Roma. Over here, we have a note that maybe Motta would work, Fabregas would work. I think someone with a bit, who gives the players a bit more liberty, would work even better than these guys. I'm talking, you know, how Pioli got the best out of Leao, for example, and how he got the best out of Brahim and these guys. You need a good man manager at Roma, because when they had Juric, it didn't work. De Rossi worked super well until he didn't, for the when he had a brand new squad and he had a tough time over there.
Yeah, I think you need a man of the people. And I think that's why Gasperini would be a disaster over there.
Absolutely.
I think if Gasperini goes, I mean, granted, Roma don't really have any like standout stars apart from Dybala, for example. But so maybe it wouldn't be too bad. But we've seen like the likes of Juric, the likes of, I don't know, it's just they need someone who's more, like Ranieri is doing so well, De Rossi did so well, when you can like put your arm around the player, you know, that type of manager.
Mourinho has that as well, even
Mourinho is kind of a unique approach, because he does both.
Yeah.
He's harsh when he needs to be, but overall, I think he's very much a man of the people as well.
He's always had a good relationship with the clubs and with the players alike. They've always had great respect with
youngsters
for him. I've never seen players weep that a manager was leaving, the same way Inter were weeping, and Materazzi in particular when Mourinho was leaving. So I think a big personality is needed in Rome. You need someone, a father-like figure, and someone that has the club's respect.
I think Sarri might be an interesting shot, because they have the, maybe not for the reason we're saying, but when it comes to system-wise and player, player profile-wise, man, a 4-3-3 would really suit Roma. And they have the perfect players for it. Sule, Dybala, Dovbyk. Salamakers doesn't really quite fit. But three at the back, managers that are Italian and available. There aren't really many, eh, nowadays, man.
You know what?
I mean, Pioli can do it. Pioli has done it. Like,
there's Mancini, who is a free agent at the moment. He was at the Saudi national team.
Has he been rumored to Juve, or did I dream that?
He might be.
I think so.
He might be. Well, he's in the picture. He's an interesting one to return to Italy,
man. It's true. I wonder how he'd do on a domestic level nowadays.
Probably Roberto Mancini. Probably well. You don't lose that shit.
Yeah.
He'd come back and do a job. Shall we
Juve have launched talks with him, apparently.
But they've Juve,
with everyone, they're
in him and interested in Pioli. Yeah, that's the latest.
Interesting.
Next question.
Yes, next question from Frank is, why has Costa Runjajc not been given the same credit as other provincial club managers this season? Fabregas, Vanoli, Vieira and others have all been talked up, but he seems to have flown under the radar. So I have a theory when it comes to this. So Fabregas is playing an attractive brand with Como, whose marketing team is excellent. So kind of like, even the fact that there's Thierry Henry involved and all the celebrity culture behind Como and his backing, it kind of put him on
sexy.
The exactly it's highly talked about. So there's that. Vanoli had last season with Venezia to get them promoted. He got a lot of attention for that, and Torino are doing okay, and sometimes they
I don't find he's talked about.
I don't
that
think
much.
I think he's only maybe slightly talked about more than Runjajc is. Vieira, the fact that he pretty much took Genoa out of the relegation scrap, because they were in it.
They're essentially lost.
He does deserve it. It's very reactionary. Runjajc has been doing a solid job. He's got results against big teams as well. He's steadied the ship at Udinese. He's created a pragmatic system with very big, strong, powerful players that gives you kind of like a hard team to play against. It's not exactly sexy, as you said. So that's why I guess
Udinese aren't a super marketable team, and that not marketable. They're, they, like you said about Como, probably about Venezia as well. They're new shit at the end of the day, and also just the fact that he started well this season, Runjajc, at Udinese. Had they been in trouble and he got them out of trouble,
it's true,
he would have probably done himself a favor if he started off a bit shit. But people have to remember that for the past two seasons, Udinese have been battling relegation. and they're nowhere near that conversation.
Great observation, bro, because he had a negative spell halfway through the season, kind of like he had three losses in a row against Venezia, Juve and Atalanta, then a draw to Empoli and a loss to Genoa. That was a really bad spell. Yeah. But then after that, he picked up and now they're doing well again.
They've gained, now. Are they? What's,
now
what's
they had,
the score
they had
right
three
now?
Wins. They lost 1-0 to Verona. So that's it. Yeah, I mean, it's his first season. He's doing good things, but it's not exactly consistent or it's not anything really to write home about.
It's a great run right now.
Yeah, they're 10th. I mean, if you think who's 10th in Serie A, it's always Udinese.
It's, Udinese or except, Torino. Except when it's Torino.
Exactly,
Next question, sir.
Yes, so the next question comes from one of our patrons in Tyson, who asks, if Jeffrey Epstein was a Serie A player, what position would he play and for what team?
I'd say he'd be the manager of Atalanta.
Yes.
That's the only right answer.
Yes, not the center midfielder of the Juve next gen team.
or the physiotherapist. The physiotherapist of Milan Futuro. Yeah. That's terrible.
This question was brought up because, of course, Gasperini looks exactly like Jeffrey Epstein. It's bizarre. Yeah. Look it up if
you haven't. Crazy. It's crazy. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Alan actually said he'd be in Serie A playing for the Futura.
That's brilliant, man. That's so good. Next, we've got Andrew Batman, brother.
Yes. So let me just take a sip before this one.
Uh-huh. I like how Batman, Matthias, and Alan only send chunks of text.
Love it. Absolutely love that. I have a bad habit of hitting send after every sentence.
And it looks...
Thoughts on systems versus culture style managers.
I love this
Realize
question.
It's too early to judge entirely Motta's career and it's not black and white between the two approaches, pardon the pun. But does this type of manager require too long to be impactful in the top clubs or top leagues? What could these managers learn from the likes of Conte, who seems to get immediate impact at new clubs, or the longevity of Gasp or Ancelotti? My personal view that some of these young coaches are taking these big jobs too early in their careers and don't have the shithousery needed to get results. Like a politician, it only works if you are in power, so you just need to keep your job first. I totally agree
Can
with
that. Can I just, sorry, because Adam Kauser's question is a follow-up on
okay,
that.
Okay, please, please.
So I'm just going to go ahead and read that out because we'll probably answer both by answering one. Following on from Batman, what's your opinion on the development of more specific and rigid styles of play? Younger managers like Pep, Motta and Amorim seem to have these more rigid systems versus the older, maybe more adaptable managers who sometimes are more flexible like Ancelotti or Mourinho. Do you think this has killed some of the creative spark that new players coming through could have had? Maybe it's rose-tinted lenses, but I feel like we're seeing fewer the streets won't forget kind of players like Ronaldinho or even Adel Tarapt, obviously not as good.
Mm-hmm. The death of the fantasista, right?
Yes.
These systems,
yes.
Absolutely. I think that nowadays there's so much on the line when it comes to football at the highest level that you need a system that's going to work. You need... They're starting to apply science behind the system, right?
Yeah.
These algorithms, these patterns of play, everything is structured and there's no real room for improvisation. That's why I tend to enjoy the lower tier teams because they do deploy players in these roles. They give them freedom, more freedom than you typically would. Nowadays, you have to be an absolute freak of nature to be given a free role at a top team. It needs to be an exception. I think that when it comes to system managers, It's okay to have your own system, and I kind of like that managers have their own philosophies
of
the game.
Identity.
It's your identity, and it's interesting to see different styles come up against each other and all that. However, as we discussed in the last episode, I also think it's important to look at what you have in front of you, and I think this is what actually makes a good manager. And if what you have in front of you does not apply to your system, then you need to tweak your system to fit the players ever so slightly. If you don't do that, then I don't think that you are a very adaptable manager.
Exactly. If you are simply signing players that... If you're simply signing the perfect players for your system and not making it work with a club that you've been assigned to, then you know, like Amorim just joined United, for example. Now it's super tough to join a club like United, who the past few managers, they've all had a tough time, the openly speaking about the top-down issue over there with the owners, with the training facilities and everything, even Ronaldo, the famous interview with Piers Morgan. And it's also super difficult to join a club halfway through the season with players that don't fit your system. That's fair. That's fair. But then you see managers, more veteran managers, that played in the... Sorry, that had managerial roles in the earlier 2000s, 2010s, so on and so forth, where these fantasists still used to exist. And they used to work with world-class talents and get the best out of them. And there was Mourinho, who'd get the best out of Ronaldo and Ozil and Di Maria. And then have a solid midfield with Khedira and Xabi Alonso, for example. And just... And then go to a different team, like when he was at Inter, and have a completely different system over there. I don't like managers that are one-trick ponies. Because a manager needs... For me, a good manager is someone that can walk into any team and get the best out
exactly,
of
it. Exactly, that's it. That's it. And that's what's so great about Ancelotti. He always mentioned that time at Everton, right? Where he had, I don't remember who the personnel
were. Pickford and Calvert-Lewin, I believe.
Yeah. So it was just long balls and knockdowns and things. The complete opposite of what he did when he had better players, of course. Yes, it's like a hairdresser. Like a hairdresser who only learns how to style thick, full heads of hair. Mm. So he does low tapers, for example. Then you show up and you've got a thinning head of hair and he tries to do the same thing. You can't. You need to adapt to the hair that you have in front
analogy.
Of you.
Perfect analogy. I think that's it. There's also the point of younger managers are getting bigger roles. Yes, absolutely. Like Motta getting the Juve role.
They're the most underqualified. Now, I know Motta did the rounds at Spezia and whatever, but I think that it's very clear when you see a manager who hustled in the lower divisions compared to when you see a new manager coming out of nowhere and starting with like a relegation side in the top division. That's too much of a task, I think, sometimes. Mm. And it's the minority that actually do well in that situation. I think that starting out in Serie C or even lower is essential and working your way up. And of course, being a player with a CV and being respected will get you more opportunities naturally. But I think they need to have the intuition to take a job at least in Serie B
Then there are the special cases. There's the Peps and the Zidanes.
Of course.
Those are the special cases. And I think Motta might be one of them, maybe. It's still too early to see, but... Any of these managers like Motta, like I said in the last episode, can end up being the next Gianpaolo, who do great things at one small team. They make the big move, doesn't work, and then they just end up being mid-tier managers. That it could be.
Motta's Bologna might be Gianpaolo's Sampdoria, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, the next question comes from Matthias. He says, with the pod being recorded mid-European match day, do you think it's good or bad for the Serie A campaign if the remaining Italian teams, Inter, Roma, Lazio and Fiorentina, make it to the next round? Losing might make you more focused on the league, but it's also a loss of motivation. Of course, the games have happened, so we know where they stand. I think, of course, advancing is always a negative thing when it comes to squad fitness and, of course, crowded schedules and all that. However, it's always good for morale, right, of you, and as he's saying. I think that for the likes of Inter, for example, we got a good and an interesting message from Frank on X, who said that he thinks that Inter would probably prioritize the Champions League this year because they've already got that second star, which is very interesting.
Probably.
So that's actually probably true, right?
I think it depends solely what is on the line. Mm-hmm. So I don't think advancing in a competition is ever a bad thing.
That's it.
But there was a situation where Roma got fucked because of it with Mourinho. When they got to the Europa League final, they were in fifth place in Serie A, pushing to get Champions League. Could have gotten Champions League, but Mourinho openly said, we are putting all our eggs in this Europa League basket. We want that trophy, and like that, two birds, one stone, we get the trophy and we get Champions League football. Go to the final, get fucked over by the ref, lose, and everything falls to shit. So it's all about what kind of stage you're in. If you're like Inter right now, they're in the best possible situation, Inter. Because they're first in the league, they're still in the Champions League, and they're still in the Coppa. Everyone's talking about it like it's a problem. For player fitness, whatever, which is true, but you can't argue that that is exactly where what every fan would want from their team. So
yes.
I always think it's a good thing That's to it. Be in all the competitions.
People look at it in the long run and they say that not prioritizing one of those competitions might jeopardize the whole lot. It might not be the case. We'll see.
And you need what you need is a unique approach for each competition. You need essentially a different starting 11 for each competition.
And that's the problem with Inter.
It's like teams would friggin' play their entire second team in a match against Lecce in the league and then go full team in the Champions League against Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, you can play second team players and first team players together one day and in the same thing another day. And you play players that suit the style of opponent that you have ahead of you. Pioli used to do that well, for example. Pioli's rotation I used to enjoy when he had that time when he actually had a little bit of decent depth. But I don't like this. It's either completely the second team or either completely the first team.
Yeah. Of course, I think Roma will be the most disappointed from the lot because they were hoping for Champions League qualification through an Europa League trophy. But of course, they had that whole situation with Hummels getting sent off and losing 3-1 to a very impressive Athletic club.
So
I think they would be the most disappointed, Roma. Lazio, of course, still competing, still very much there. Juve in a weird situation right now with their fans not even showing up for the next game against Fiorentina. So
Milan as well.
So Milan needed it too, of course, yes. Mm-hmm. But we can move on to Tyson's questions. He says, what are your opinions on Serie A wanting to be the first league to have games in the United States? What are the repercussions and what does it mean for the Italian footballing pyramid?
I think the repercussions is that you're taking a product out of its home and you're putting it in a commercially, in a super commercial environment and it becomes overly commercialized. Now, isn't that the case in the Premier League and they have so much purchasing power and this is the way Italy can compete on that front? If that's the way Italy can compete on that front, I don't want Italy to compete on that front because I want the Venetians to get a bus ride to watch the game, not a fucking connection flight to the US to watch their team play.
What you get in a situation like this is what we saw with the whole Saudi Arabia thing or wherever it was with the Coppa Italia, right, or the Supercoppa, where people were disappointed at the likes of Atalanta and was it Fiorentina making it? I forgot who it was. No, Atalanta and
this year or last year?
Last year.
Fiorentina
and Atalanta, because they played each other and there was absolutely no turnout in the stadium. Mm-hmm. And apparently the sheiks. They were extremely disappointed with the marketing ability. And that's something that would never happen in Italy. Absolutely had that not. Tournament been played in Italy, the stadium would have been packed with Fiorentina fans and Atalanta fans who are passionate. You are taking the team of the city. The team is literally named after the city. And you are removing it from the country and the continent, putting it elsewhere in a different time zone. Doesn't make any sense. Let's hope this never happens.
Yeah,
that's my opinion. I'm all for foreign investment, of course. I'm all for come to the league. We've seen so many love stories, so many successful stories with foreign investors. Like Rocco Commisso has done a great job at Fiorentina, coming in, adapting to the Italian culture, you know, understanding the piazza and the culture over there, kind of respecting it
don't take it out of it. So what is this Trump Gaza like, man? The fucking Serie A, baby.
We're gonna make a reserve. If you could create... No, this is a difficult one, yes. This was a really interesting question about making a starting 11 from the north of players born in the north of Italy and a starting 11 of players born in the south of Italy, but we haven't had time to prepare. To be honest, I have fucking no idea who's from the north and the south.
I know Barella's from Sardinia.
Exactly, and Donnarumma and Insigne from the south, of course. I don't know, but this would be interesting one day. Conte mentioned recently that the tifo by Napoli ultras against Fiorentina made him emotional for the first time in years. Sounds about right. since these giant fan displays have become more and more rare, they really have, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Could you rank your own top three tifos or choreographies by Serie A clubs from this season and last season? Now, in recent times, no choreographies have really stood out to me.
I liked Atalanta's last week against Juve. It was simply their badge.
But away from home, it's crazy to have a choreography like that.
Yeah, it was. I felt it was impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just zoom out of the stadium and you don't see a Juve badge, but you see that massive Atalanta one, and then they win 4-0. I felt that was really impactful.
Really, it really was. I liked, of course, Roma's stadium atmosphere in the Europa League for their game against Athletic Club. It was the first one, the home one, of course. It was amazing. And when it comes to tifos, I think in Italy, it's Milan who are the kings, right?
Absolutely.
Milan and Inter are the kings.
Yes, in the Derby della Madonnina, that's where you see the best ones.
I had seen the Berlusconi one live, that was absolutely amazing. During COVID, there was one to honor the workers. When Milan played Napoli, there were the devil's hands and the Pulcinella in the middle looking scared.
I had seen the Zlatan one live, that was really cute.
Yes.
And I think just one that always stood out to me was PSG had a really cool tifo against Milan, where it's like someone shooting Milan, and then Milan caught the bullet in the home game. That was just
the Matrix, right? I believe it was.
Just the perfect response.
Yeah. I also like it's a very small tifo, but a very powerful one. The game over one of Milan during the
Band. And the Welcome to Hell as
Welcome to Hell is super
fucking cool.
Yeah. Honestly, I think they should bring them back. And to be honest, man, nowadays when you flick on the TV, it doesn't even include it in the broadcast. So you miss them half the time. You have to see them on Twitter afterwards.
Very true.
Very true. Game's gone.
Alan is next.
Who is the first Indonesian player to play in Serie A? So up until last week, it was Jay Idzes. But now, it's Emi Laudero. He's changed his... Of course, Emi Laudero, born in Indonesia, but represented Italy at youth level, has now transferred to the Indonesian national team.
So that...
That makes him the first, I guess. Does it?
I guess not, though.
Why
because
not?
He wasn't representing Indonesia at the time.
I guess...
I guess we need to ask him. Hey,
we
bro.
We need to ask him. It's like, listen, were you... Is it new that you're Indonesian or where you at?
This is
it's bizarre. I don't know.
I don't know who is the first Indonesian. Jay Idzes.
Jay Idzes. Definitely the first to score. That's it.
Yes.
Okay. The next one comes from Alex. God help me with the surname.
Gialanella. Or Gialanella.
He says Conte has proven to be the best manager in Serie A this year. He's taken a team that finished 10th and sold their best player, loaned their second best player, and has them in a Scudetto race. Does he stay at Napoli next year? I hope so. Forza Napoli.
I agree think, and yes.
Yes, same. Same. I think it's between him, this season, Gasperini.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Inzaghi's always there. But then there's also, of course, shout out to Ranieri and what he's doing, right? But
Ranieri, let's not get to Ranieri will probably win coach of the season.
Conte. It's crazy how he took them from 10th and he's competing for the Scudetto with all these factors taken into consideration, and the fact that he's also tweaked his system to fit the players that he has, and like he's dealt with the Neres injury and all that, as we discussed in the last episode, by kind of like deploying Raspadori in his preferred position. Yes, I think he's doing really well.
I agree.
And even the players he's pushing,
I think
pushed
keep
for
him next season.
And I think so.
Keep him.
I think so too.
Let's go Milan in 20 minutes.
Tim asks, is Insigne being a pedantic cunt and refusing to move to any offer that comes in for him despite having the second highest wages in the league after Messi making headlines in Italy or Malta and or LOL MLS?
No.
So, I had no idea about this. I had no idea that Insigne was the second highest earner in America behind Messi. I had no idea that he was rejecting offers. I know at one point he was close to joining Monza or something. There were talks. But no, I haven't really heard about this. And to be honest, no shit, he isn't leaving.
I think he has a great story.
He's living in America.
Neapolitan boy. Did great things for the club. He's essentially, a legend at the club. He made his money move to me. If he made his money move, went to the US, stick it out, enjoy it, do you.
Yeah.
I think him coming back with already his lack of physicality, that kind of makes it difficult for him to compete. It's really his football mind that made him good. He might struggle going back to Serie A and keeping that level up after going to the US for a while. We saw the same thing with Jovinko, for example. It's not easy. The only guy that can do that shit is Zlatan. Where he goes to the US and then he moves to the States. He goes to the US and then he goes to the Premier League.
Exactly. My God. True. I mean, usually when these players go to these kind of lower leagues. Granted, that it's not exactly fair because they're getting paid a shit ton. So it's not exactly fair that they take it easy and or they stop working as hard. But Zlatan has always been the type to never work.
Exactly.
Never sacrifice
the
work.
Italians are different, but bro, I think the Italians, if they go to the US, they will chill as hard as they possibly can. Yeah. Unless you're Bernardeschi, then you just start like getting Botox and do a lot of podcasts. And...
One, two, three. All for one.
He's great. I love him. I always love him.
What a positive guy.
Valla.
The Italians second to only the Brazilians, by the way, because the second the Brazilian is 30,
bro.
I don't know what the hell happens. Their metabolism just stops.
Literally, bro. And like, you know who's like, the Dutch stay in fantastic shape. Look at Seedorf, look at Gullit, look at everyone, but
look
for
at Schneider.
Wesley Schneider, bro. Wesley Schneider. Jesus.
My God, Schneider, what the hell? So now the next one isn't a question, but a realization, a moment of clarity. It's kind of like when your third eye is opened and you become very like hyper aware of the different universes that exist and the different realms of reality and everything. Anthony Lokash sent us a message. In the event that you guys don't know this, I wanted to tell you that Moist Queen has a middle name and it's Biotti. Moist Booty Queen, bro.
You actually read the typo, which really ruined it.
It ruined the joke. But that's how he put it, huh?
To be fair.
Moist Booty Queen, bro. And to which we replied, I have no fucking way. I mean,
Booty Queen of Only. Fiore, he
had some troubles at Juve. Moist Booty Queen, bro. That's insane.
I'm trying to think of the next verse and I'm ruining it.
That's fine. It's fine, okay, bro.
Shout out, Lokash.
Shout out to Lokash.
Hopefully, we will see you in August. Yes, we're trying to make it work.
Trying our very best.
Yes. That's it for this episode. We're going to run because Milan start in 15 minutes. And
yes,
like
Jake
said,
it's
a clean sweep for Milan now. 10 games left, 9 games left.
Win them all?
Because
now, look at this. This might age like milk. Bologna, Fiorentina, Juve, and who else was it?
Oh, God.
They all play each other. Whip it out, whip it out, whip it out.
Whip it out on the pod, bro. You're serious. So Milan play Como, obviously. And then there's... No, you're right to a degree. There's Bologna, Lazio, and Fiorentina, Juve.
Yes.
And Atalanta.
So if Milan win, they're going to gain ground. So we'll
gain
see.
Ground.
Gain ground. They can do it. They're making the mice transgender.
Speaking of reading typos out.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys. We hope feedback, obviously. 45 minutes, which is a good amount of time for a question segment. Again, it just allows us to chill with them and actually engage with you guys a little bit more. But let us know what you thought of this episode and whether or not it's something we should keep up so that we'll have two recording days a week.
Yay.
So that our girlfriends would complain even more. But anyway, love you all. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and we'll see you all very soon.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. and the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.